I'm Steve Gilman, and this is Brand Story, where we help you build stronger, more sustainable brands by sharing insightful conversations with brand leaders, marketers, and professional storytellers. My guest today is Liam Darmody.
If you can get on the radar of people that you don't know, then you're attracting opportunity that you don't know exists.
Liam is a personal brand strategist that helps founders and executives build their personal brands, and he's also a self-professed LinkedIn nerd. Liam spent 2 decades scaling go-to-market operations at tech startups before founding Liam's Brandstand, his consultancy that focuses on helping others establish and build their personal brand on LinkedIn. Hey, Liam, welcome to Brand Story.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
Yeah, I think we'll have a blast. We have a friend in common that's been a prior guest. Mita Malik has been on the podcast twice.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. She's one of our guests that's returned. I had her on, I think it was in season one. And then she came back to roll out her book.
It's fantastic. Mita's doing great. She's a really good friend. We were in the Creator Accelerator program together with LinkedIn, and we have a propensity for doing audio rooms together, and we love them. They're a lot of fun.
I've seen a few of those. I wanted to make the last one, and then of course had a meeting on my calendar with a client and I couldn't get there, but I'm looking forward to the next one whenever you guys do it.
Yeah, we're going to do it in another month or two.
That's great. Yeah, she's the best. So I think it'll be really fun today and fun for our audience to talk all things LinkedIn and personal branding. I'm a brand strategist, but for financial brands and healthcare brands and manufacturers. So this is a little different. You know, you and I do the same thing, but for different organizations with different complications and different complexities. And you got really into LinkedIn around the pandemic, right?
Yeah. 2019, my daughter was born and I was on paternity leave. And for the year leading up to that, I had been lurking and consuming. I've been on LinkedIn since 2005, but actively sort of paying attention to it from a content standpoint around then. And I swore I was going to take my paternity leave and start creating content. And I still couldn't get over that hump. I was still nervous about it. And I was still worried about what my employer would say if they saw that I started posting on LinkedIn, like so many people are. And then a month after, when I went back to work, I said, screw it, I'm just going to do it. So I started in 2020. And then when the pandemic actually hit, it just took on a life form of its own. It became sort of my community. It was the only outlet that I had. I lived in a small house in Northern Virginia with an infant and a toddler and my wife, and I love all of them dearly. But you can imagine, I missed the conversation that happens at an office. Being in a startup world, like I'm used to having really vibrant cultures and really sort of relaxed, casual atmosphere where work and play kind of intertwine. So LinkedIn became that for me. And I've been posting there ever since.
Yeah, you're really prolific. And I think you really have an honest desire to help others learn how to use the space, which I think is cool. You know, I think I doubled down on LinkedIn in 2020. And that's where this podcast was started, because I was tired of not having really good one-on-one conversations. That's sort of my sweet spot. I'm an introvert. I love talking to people one-on-one. And I love this. And the thing about podcasts for me is that so many of them have they're really trying to sell something. So their value proposition's just under the surface and they sort of restate it over and over again. We decided to do something different. So this is all about you today.
That's awesome. I love it. And honestly, it's interesting. Like I'm kind of thinking myself, this year going out on my own, I have all these ideas of what I want to do, build community, build a course, build podcast. And I'm like what you said, I'm an extreme extrovert, but I love conversation. So that's kind of the thing that matters to me the most. So I'm excited to chop it up with you.
So you touched on something when we first started talking about how people sit on the sidelines. We all know there are tons of lurkers out there. We've been lurkers ourselves. Sometimes we currently lurk. But I think a lot of people are afraid to dive in and create any kind of content, because they think, oh, their employer will judge them, or it means they're looking for a job, or it means all these things. What kind of advice would you give people who are just scared or hesitant to jump in?
First, I say don't be hard on yourself. It's natural. LinkedIn has a very unique sort of value proposition to people and different things to different people. I think it is the oldest social network when you think about it. It was around before Facebook and Twitter, and you don't really think about LinkedIn as a social platform. When you go to take a survey from a company and they say, where did you find us? LinkedIn usually isn't on that list, which is so interesting because it is a business platform. But that's changing. And so I think the first thing is don't don't give yourself grief about the fact that you have this anxiety, because most people do have this anxiety. The truth is that a single digit percentage of LinkedIn members create content on a weekly basis, and only about 25% of people are using this platform on a monthly basis. So, you know, you're in the majority. The second thing I would say is try and think about what it is that's holding you back. And if your concerns are well-founded, right? A lot of people think, oh, my boss is going to think I'm looking for a job. Like, ask your boss, just have the conversation. Like, hey, I really want to start creating content on LinkedIn. How do you feel about that? Like, I'm not looking for a job. I just really like having a conversation on LinkedIn about business or whatever. You'd be surprised. A lot of bosses be like, yeah, sure, go ahead. Like, that's great. I would love to do it too. Maybe we can do it together, right? The other thing is, I always tell people to think about the fact that if you're employed specifically, like, our employers hire us because our personality is such a big part of what we do. Like, yes, our skill is important, but they also want to make sure that we're additive to their culture. And you bring your personality to your work. You bring your personality to conversations with clients and with other employees and with customers. So why would your employer care if you started talking about the skills that you have on LinkedIn? And I know on the flip side, there are employers who say, well, if they post on LinkedIn, they're more likely to get poached by recruiters. And my response to that is, that's not your worry. Your worry should be, do they have enough of a reason to stay if they are recruited by recruiters? Because recruiters are recruiting them regardless. It's not because they're posting.
I agree. And also, it's, you know, if you'll send an employee to a trade show or out anywhere to talk to anyone, it's fine for them to be on LinkedIn. And I had Steve Watt. I don't know if you know who Steve Watt is. Yeah, I had Steve on the podcast and we had a blast talking about, you know, social selling and how to just be real and be a real person, and how so many companies with their LinkedIn activity just post the official word, and then they want, you know, their employees to be like modems and just put out the word, the exact same word, you know? And that's absurd. Like, you want your employees to represent, if they're members of your team, they should represent who they are in the context sometimes of what you all do. But if they're showing who they are and they're passionate, that says good things about your company, not bad things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of employers need to start treating the employee relationship more like sports teams treat athlete relationships, right? You're there for, you have this talent for a certain period of time. They're not going to stay for 30 years. Those days are gone. But if they're there for three or 4 years, you might as well make the most of it. You might as well keep them happy. You might as well make them feel fulfilled and want to tell people about your place of business so that they can recruit other folks, or, you know, your clients are seeing that the people that are, you know, putting that product or service together are happy where they are. The potential value proposition of that from a marketing and an employer branding standpoint is far outweighs the risk, in my opinion.
Yeah, it does. And so many companies don't look at it that way yet, but I hope they do, because, you know, taking care of employees and being there for them and helping them grow is really the new way to help people succeed. It should have always been the way, but, you know, who knows? It
takes time.
It does. So you had a quote that is one of my favorite things you said, and I love it. And it's, LinkedIn is a serendipity manifestation platform, and the more content you create, the more serendipity you manifest.
Yes, that is my tagline. I have had so much good fortune since I started sharing my voice on this platform. I've been invited to podcasts like yours, and I, you know, have been part of the Creator Accelerator program. I've been featured in certain articles by, you know, big prominent magazines where I never would have been in those. I mean, there's nothing really particularly special about me. I'm a suburban dad who likes to barbecue and collects hot sauce and like shoes. And so if somebody like myself can have the type of following and engagement and audience that I've built on LinkedIn, anybody can. And I think, you know, I'm a Canadian, so hockey's my thing. And, you know, Gretzky used to say, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And that's very true. And, you know, you don't know what exists out there as a possibility or an opportunity if you're not showing up and putting yourself on people's radar. I think that's the thing that for me is the most beneficial reason for posting, right? If you can get on the radar of people that you don't know, then you're attracting opportunity that you don't know exists. And, you know, for me, the light bulb really went off when I spent, you know, the first 15 years of my career doing sales operations, revenue operations, a bunch of different kind of operational roles at startups. And then I got a call from a company that wanted to interview me for a revenue operations position. And the chief marketing officer said, you know, you could probably do this job, but like, I could probably find somebody else to do the job. In fact, I've got somebody else that I'm interviewing and I think I have something you might like better. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And he's like, I don't have a job description for it yet. I was like, that's fine. I don't really need it. He goes, but we're talking about this position at the board level. It's really important. Like, we need to basically stand up a recruiting engine that is outbound, because to date we've only been an inbound recruiting company. He said, with your experience in sales operations and your experience in branding, I think you could help us build a really strong employer brand. And I was like, the first part sounds great, but I was like, what are you talking about? I don't have any branding experience. And he said, what are you talking? You have tons. You do it every day on LinkedIn. And that's where the light bulb went off for me. I was like, wait a minute. This person's been seeing me post just random thoughts on LinkedIn for the last 2 or 3 years. And that's given them the confidence to invite me to do a role that if I had applied for, the recruiter would have flat out rejected it. Because on paper, I didn't meet the criteria. But in practice, which I was putting on display, I did. And that is a very powerful thing.
It is. Your personal brand was speaking volumes, you know? And that's what you do with the actions you take and the posts and the consistency and how you show up.
And I think a lot of people struggle with it because they don't like the term personal brand. And to be frank, I don't love it either. Like,
right. It's an awkward way to talk about it.
It is, absolutely. But it is what it is. And, you know, if you look at Google Trends and you look at the search criteria for personal brand since 2004, it's like this. So clearly people are paying attention to that. I had a poll go live last week. 94% of people said that they think it's important to build one. And so, you know, it's a thing and people need to pay attention to it.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's somewhat synonymous with reputation, but it goes beyond that, you know, and it's interesting. It's how you show up in the world and the way you show up and the stories you tell, not by selling and talking all the time, but the stories you tell by the actions you take. So there's someone you might know that was also on the podcast, Kelly Schweitzer from the Creator Program.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was on the podcast and she has a sort of thing that goes along with your Serendipity Manifestation platform that I love. And her and I talked about it a great deal. She calls LinkedIn the platform of generosity.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things. So when you're, you know, if you think about the concept that you talk about, you know, manifesting serendipity, and you think about the platform of generosity, then really, you know, what is the best way to behave once you're on the platform? Because I think that's what intimidates people is, what do I do? You know, if I like something, am I then committing? Am I endorsing it? Is it, you know, am I making a commitment? What do I do here? You know, so how do you behave? How do you advise the people behave when they go on?
So I typically tell people to create content as if they were writing in a journal that they would share with family, friends, and colleagues. Because typically speaking, you're being comfortable writing as yourself. You're putting your genuine thoughts down. They're from the heart. They're authentic. But you're not going to go overboard and be too crazy, right? You're not going to go too far down the personal rabbit hole. You're not going to go down a political rabbit hole. You're not going to necessarily like say things that are too inflammatory or anything.
At least we hope not.
We hope not, right? Like, I mean, you might. Some people may. There's certainly like. My typical thinking is that, you know, LinkedIn is special because there's a bit of a self-policing mechanism built into it. And so people are a little bit wary. They don't necessarily want their boss or their peers or colleagues or clients or future prospective employers to see them being a jackass. And so they don't act that way. Now, again, there are exceptions to every rule, but generally speaking, I think that's kind of why I've made it my home. I think it's a little bit more of an elevated conversation, and it's people that are kind of going above the fray a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And I think people behave with something that I wish was on other social platforms, which is courtesy.
Yes.
And a touch of kindness and support, you know? And that's rare. You go on other social platforms, it's easy to hide behind a keyboard and be a jackass.
Yeah.
And just, you know, say crazy shit and throw out anger and
a lot,
you know,
of snark.
Rant.
A lot of snark. Yeah. I mean, there are social media accounts on other platforms that are dedicated to making fun of people on LinkedIn. And I'm just like, how sad is your life that you have to spend your life, you know, making fun of other people on a social platform? I mean, you know, you might be making money from it from sponsorships, but that's not how I want to make cash.
Yeah. It's the same people that have a problem with Taylor Swift. It's like, if you can't just be happy with other, yeah, for other people, just go away. Just go sit over there.
100%.
Let the adults have fun while you sit over there and throw your temper tantrums.
Bingo.
So yeah, that's what I love about the space too. And I think, you know, I've talked to groups about LinkedIn and I've talked to others about LinkedIn. And I think that like fear to look dumb or not know what to say or not know how to behave is really a big deal. It's like something that it really stops people from their first post, you know? How do I get that first one or maybe the second one? Or it stops someone from commenting, you know? So how do you encourage people to get off the sidelines? Because I think that's a huge thing. I mean, obviously, people reach out to you because they're interested in doing that.
Yeah. No, it's massive. And I think it's just so interesting. And it sort of symbolizes a little bit of the rock and a hard place that LinkedIn is in. Because you've got this platform that started as a place to store your offline contacts online. And now that so many people are online and building relationships with other humans online, it's like, well, wait a minute, like, what am I using this for? And then it's like, well, I'm only going to use it every 4 years for a new job. But in between those 4 years, you could be using it for so much more. You could be building relationships and connection. And so it's so interesting to me that that phenomenon exists, right? If I'm having a conversation with a colleague and they're like, what do you think about this? You're not saying, well, if I can't respond to that because I'm not worthy. I don't have a PhD or I'm not, you just say, well, this is what I think about it. And it's almost as if people think that them putting it out there is going to be, you know, scrutinized by all of the experts that are in that space. And the truth of the matter is, and it's, you know, it might sound a little harsh, but I'm like, nobody cares about you that much. Like, people are going about their day. They're busy. They've got tons of other stuff in their feed that they're going to look at. And they're going to take a split second and see what you write. And they're going to think about it. And if it resonates, they might comment and engage with it. And if it doesn't, then they might scroll through. And I think one of the challenges that people face the most is that you've got all these people that are talking about, oh, on LinkedIn, you can go 0 to 60,000 followers in no time and you can get 1 million impressions and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so there's this inherent pressure behind it. And then people are like, well, wait, I put myself out there and I got 5 reactions and 300 impressions. Well, of course you did. You've never been here before and you're new to the platform. So your network's not really used to seeing you create content. Like, you need to do it consistently for a long period of time to really start to build momentum, as with anything, right? But people have this pressure because they see all this bombastic marketing coming from people. And, you know, I just tell people to ignore it if they can and focus on writing, fall in love with writing and expressing yourself as yourself. And don't worry too much about who engages or what they say or what they think. And the other thing that I say is the most effective branding is branding that attracts your target audience and detracts the ones that you don't want. And so you're doing yourself a favor if you're putting stuff out there and people that don't like what you have to say are passing by it, because then you're not wasting time with them, right? I would rather somebody look at my profile and say, I don't like his style. I don't want to reach out to him. I don't want to interview him. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to work with him. Then submit a request to work with me or see if I want to interview for a position and then make me go through all the hoops and then realize, actually, don't really like you.
That happens to people without clear brands. And the thing about it is that, you know, you can't be all things to all people, and any good brand is for something and against something else, whether that's in a really strong way or in a way that's just inherently obvious.
The only other thing that I'll add to that is, you know, I think if you think about how important picking a new employer is or working with somebody that, you know, you're going to pay to be a coach or a consultant, like if you spend 2 hours or 3 hours talking to that person in an interview or, you know, over a period of time, that's not really a lot of time to get to know who they are and how they are, right? And so the more you can put yourself out there, the more people can see who you are, how you think, how you communicate, what it's like to potentially have a conversation with you. There's a familiarity that breeds itself there. And that is what you want people to have. You want people to feel connected to you. And then when you do end up having a conversation, it's almost like you're just friends picking up where you left off. And that is a fantastic feeling.
I love that. And, you know, to go back to something you said just a little bit ago that I think is really important is, you know, people, still show up in so many ways when they want something. Like, I need a job now. I have a job, but now 4 years later, I want a job. And then they get on LinkedIn. That's the exact thing that brands do when they're bad at marketing. Marketing or getting something or having someone want to talk to you is not a faucet. You don't turn it on and off when you want it. So showing up consistently over time strengthens your case of like, hey, this is someone I might want to hire. This is someone I might see an opportunity, or I need some help. Maybe I'll reach out to this person. So just whether you're a brand, a person, a personal brand, whatever, showing up, being consistent, and talking about what you care about creates a presence that people can relate to. So, you know, it's just like salespeople that show up only, or fundraisers that show up only when they want something. You know, are you more likely to give money to a fundraiser that you've been hanging out with and you know, and they talk about things you care about and then they ask you, or one that just comes out of the blue and asks you?
It's familiarity. People like familiarity. People like getting to know who you are, how you think. And it just makes those conversations when there is an ask easier. And whether that's, you know, whether you're in sales or whether you're in recruiting or whatever, like, I mean, there's just so much opportunity that you can unlock when you just share your personality. And so many people have imposter syndrome. I work with people who are, you know, vice presidents, senior vice presidents at Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies. And they are, you know, insecure, just like a 25-year-old might be, who's brand new to the work environment. And like, you know, and they're just like, well, what if somebody thinks I'm an ass? And it's like, don't worry. Like, do people in real life think that? And they're like, well, maybe some. I'm like, no, like, legitimately. Like, and you know, then when you reframe it for them that way, think, oh, interesting. Like, maybe I should be putting something out there. And at that level too, like when you're talking about vice presidents or CEOs or C-levels, like the amount of knowledge and experience that those people have to get to where they are, there's infinite amounts of content you can create from that. You don't have to overthink it. It doesn't have to be a book. It doesn't have to be a thesis. It's just, you know, you're sitting there in the morning having your coffee and you're thinking about something because you've got a million thoughts going through your head. Put one of them out there every day. Make it a short, quick, it could even be as short as a tweet, right? Yeah. But just put it out there and see what happens, and people will start paying attention. And that when that happens, you know, there's a lot of fantastic things that manifest themselves.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I wish more leaders would do that. And hopefully it'll, you know, people like you and people who are consistent on the platform, people will learn from that. So what on LinkedIn do you see that peeves you? What do you see that you wish you could be like, hey, cut it out?
How much time you have? look, I think the one thing for me that LinkedIn is a fantastic place to get organic reach. And wherever there is organic reach, there will always be growth hackers who are trying to hack that growth. And there are always going to be hucksters who are trying to sell you things that will help you magically achieve the success that they've achieved. And they're not often telling you the whole picture, right? They're portraying themselves as these authentic people who are not doing anything to manipulate the metrics that they're getting or the success that they're having. But in reality, there's more happening behind the scenes that you don't necessarily know about. And that really frustrates me, because I think if there's any platform where that doesn't belong, it's this one, right? We are professionals. And, you know, we bring integrity to our work. We are authentic with our connections and our relationships with other people in real life. And that's how we should behave on the platform. And now, you know, I don't have a problem with people who genuinely like each other, supporting one another. You know, I have people like that in my life that are, you know, if I see their post, I'm going to stop and I'm going to read it. And I'm probably going to engage because I want it to do well. But there's no quid pro quo and there's no back scratching. I'm certainly not asking people to pay me to do it or paying somebody else to do it for me. And there's a lot of that on LinkedIn right now. I kind of joke that LinkedIn is, from a social media standpoint, sort of stuck in 2012, 2015 timeframe, because a lot of that stuff was popular on those platforms back then, and now it's migrated over here. And so I just think it's inauthentic, and I think it's, in a way, unethical, right? If you're charging people money to teach them how to do something that is authentic, then you shouldn't be inauthentic in your own practices.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of like, there's too much selling and too much like, you know, we've all been pitch slapped where someone does a connection request and then immediately, hits you with the sales pitch. And, you know, you had a post, I think it was today actually, about bro poetry.
Yeah, broetry.
Broetry. That cracked me up because, you know, yeah, they're just things that people do. They see other people do it. They start imitating it. And all of a sudden you get these little, like, I've been on LinkedIn long enough, you start to see these little waves and trends of everyone trying to do the thing they think works. And the only thing that works is to be yourself.
Be yourself, be consistent, and be patient. Those are the three things that are the most important you can do on that platform. And I think that that's the other thing that's so peculiar about how LinkedIn runs is that it's like everybody's trying to become Gary Vaynerchuk overnight.
But yeah, good luck.
Why? Like, just like your personal brand stays with you as long as you're alive. More or less, right? So why are you trying to hack it or make it go over super fast? Like, just slow and steady wins the race. Put out a post 3 or 4, 5 times a week if you can, and have conversation with people, meet new people, follow people that are posting content that fascinates you to get inspiration, to build connection, to support other people. And then just make it a part of your daily routine. It's not about, you know, how many followers you grew or how much engagement you have. That happens over time. You know, I've grown my following on LinkedIn a lot slower than a lot of other people. And I think that's partly because I just didn't really care. I was just like, I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about today.
Well, and you probably have much more engaged followers.
I think it certainly helps when you just aren't trying too hard.
Yeah. And when you're actually adding value, you know, and not trying to be the next Gary V. So about 8 months ago, you were invited up to go to the LinkedIn headquarters in New York.
Yeah.
And you went in person. I know you had an option to go virtually.
Yeah.
I applaud that. Like, yeah, why wouldn't you go in person, right?
Yeah. It was a photo shoot.
The photo op, and also what a blast. So I know when you were there, you were learning about the collaborative articles and community badges and all the things. And LinkedIn's always rolling out new features. Is that, I know you learned a lot there, and you've been experimenting with it and you learn all the time. Is there anything in any of the new features, like the community badges or the collaborative articles, that you'd want to tell people that are listening?
Yeah, I think, so people that are like myself, who spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, there's a lot of people that talk about collaborative articles as this, and for those who don't know, collaborative articles are basically these AI generated articles that LinkedIn is probably using to train their large language models. They have all these different functions that you can contribute your thoughts to the articles. The articles themselves are pretty vanilla, but they're there to sort of encourage people to contribute and add their 2 cents. And then if you do that often enough on a specific topic and you get enough reactions, then you'll get a little yellow badge that says you're a top community voice. Some people will say these are participation badges and participation trophies, and that they don't really matter. And there's an element of truth to that, because I've seen people that have 85 of them. And it's just not possible to be an expert in 85 different things, right? So there is that component to it. And that ties back to sort of like the growth hackers gaming the systems, right? Like, it's just annoying. But they are also helpful for people that are just trying to dip their toes in the water on the creation front, right?
Like, yeah, they are.
What do you think about this? Like, this is something that you're interested in talking about. Share your thoughts here, right? It's a way to get a little bit of traction on your personal brand without necessarily feeling like you have to create this post from scratch. You know, it's more of a prompt. And I think that's a perfectly valuable thing to have on the platform. They're also driving a lot of volume to that linkedin.com/advice URL. So, you know, they're putting a lot of power behind it. So, you know, if you're showing up there, that's a way to get discovered. And I think it just makes it easier for people to feel comfortable sharing a thought or two, versus doing it on their profile. Because you don't see collaborative article contributions on a profile. So, you know, I think that's fine. I think top voice badges, they are those mysterious things that come from LinkedIn. That's the other top voice badge, the blue one. And there's nobody understands how many people have those. It's rumored to be 300 a year. And nobody understands what the criteria is. I mean, there's people that have 2,000 followers. There's people that have 80,000 followers. There's people that have tons of engagement, and people have relatively little engagement. So I'm not really sure what goes into that. Do I want one of those? Yes, I totally do. But I mean, I'm not sweating it. You know, for me, the conversation that happens on the posts that I create are what make LinkedIn my favorite place to hang out online.
Yeah. Well, that's well said. I think that's the same thing with collaborative articles. If you aren't just into the prize or displaying the thing or the, you know what I mean? And you're not trying to game it, then just participate. And if you enjoy doing those, do them. If they help you, do them. If they don't, then post in a different way or interact and comment on people's posts. I think it's about a combination of doing what you're comfortable with and not having the anxiety. It's not a competition.
100%. 100%.
It's not how many followers you have. That drives me crazy with social platforms in general. Like, volume is not the indicator of success at all times, you know? So it's engagement and, you know, authenticity, having people that actually have your name on their lips when you aren't there.
Yes, totally.
You know, matters a whole lot more than how many followers you have. I think, you know, that's what people undervalue about LinkedIn, is that I've had people that have never commented on a post, never said anything. Like, I don't even know they follow me. And then they mention it to someone else. And somebody's like, oh, someone was telling me about your post. And I was like, that is just freaky.
One of my first clients when I started my business is somebody that I'd never spoken to before. And I didn't realize, I wasn't connected to him. And he'd been following me for about a year, and he's in the Web3 space. And you know, I've dabbled in that space myself. It's a sort of form of fascination for me. And he ended up being one of my first clients. And
that's so cool.
That's the power of that platform, right? You're putting yourself out there, and you're, and I asked, I was like, why did you decide that you wanted to work with me over somebody else? He's like, 'cause you're like the kind of person that I would hang out with.
Yeah. And that's basically, you just summed up the power of personal branding. You know, because we buy from people we know and like and trust. So when we show up and demonstrate who we are, you can figure out, oh, I just kind of like this guy. I would hang out with him. I'd like to work with him because he wouldn't be a pain in my ass.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you can make somebody think that guy seems like somebody cool to work with or have around, that then you're successful at personal branding.
Right. You're done. Yeah, I love that. I love that uncomplicated sort of view on it. That's awesome, man. So let me ask you, like, I don't want to keep you all day, so I'm going to ask you like some speed questions just about you. What's a piece of advice that you've been given about LinkedIn or about life that's really stuck with you?
Oh, great question. My dad always taught me to be myself and to just trust and try my best. Try my best and trust that things will work out. And that is very simple, but it sticks with me because there's so many things in life that are out of our control. And so if we just do our best and we show up authentically, then we should have faith that things will work out for us in some way, shape, or form. And now, that's not going to say it won't always be easy. It won't be hard at some points. Like, there will be peaks and valleys, obviously, but if you stay true to those things, you'll typically be okay. And it'll help your mind not go crazy when, you know, like something isn't going the right way, right? You just kind of have faith. The other thing I would say is a quote that I believe in. There's two quotes that really resonate with me. And the first is, there are no strangers here, only friends you haven't yet met. And that's by Yates. That is my motto for life. Like, I treat everybody like a potential future friend. And if they end up burning me, then fine. But like, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt and I'm getting to know somebody before I make a judgment. I'm not one of those people that lets that like sort of is guarded until somebody approaches me. And they don't have to win over my trust. I kind of trust until you break it. And the other is Jefferson's quote about being a great believer in luck. And I find that the harder I work, the more of it I have. And I think a lot of that is important because that, you know, luck is certainly a part of life, but you know, the harder you work, the more luck manifests itself. And so it all kind of comes together for being authentic, doing your best, trying your best, and having faith that something will happen for you as a result.
Man, well, I'll tell you, I love that. I love all of that. That's that you sort of encapsulated a very positive human philosophy there. And, you know, yeah, you manifest your own luck in a lot of ways, just by having a good attitude and showing up for yourself and showing up for others. So I love that. So what's this phase of your life? What would you call it?
Reinvigorating.
That's a good phase to be in. You seem energized. You seem energized and like, this is a blast. Have a blast, man.
Yeah, I'm having a blast. I'm focusing on my health for the first time in a really long time. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I've started going to bed after we put our kids down. I used to long for those 2 hours after they were down as my me time, right? Like, I would sit down and watch TV and then I'd snack on pretzels and have a couple beers or whatever. And I started to realize that, like, I don't need to have that, like, look forward to that, like, 2 hours of me time. Like, this is my life, is my life, all of it together. And like, it's not, there's no separation for me anymore. It's almost like I was holding on to what it was like to not have kids and like have my own little world, but like, this is my world now and I'm immersed in it fully. And I'm focused more on making it the best experience possible that I'm while I'm living it, as opposed to looking for some sort of escape. And, that's been really helpful.
Man, that's beautiful. I love that.
Thank you.
I wish more people would take that approach.
Been a long time for me, right? I think it, you know, I've had kids for 7 years now. And it was just in the last year or so, like I was at my heaviest when I got let go and I was kind of miserable. I was like, I don't know what to do with my life. And just kind of stopped worrying about it. And now I'm having fun.
Yeah. Good for you, man. And good for you getting out and walking. And I noticed you took up a walking habit. I do that every day too. And man, it'll make such a difference.
Oh yeah. Your brain is benefits so much from it.
Also, if you take care of yourself, you can take care of others. If you don't take care of yourself, it's kind of hard to really actually take care of others, you know, whether they're your clients or your family or anyone. Okay, so last question, because I have a feeling we could probably do this all afternoon. If you could give your younger self any advice, what would it be?
Don't worry so much. Don't be in a hurry. Just take it as it goes. Look at every experience as an opportunity to learn something new and potentially discover something that you're good at, as opposed to viewing every new experience as a potential risk or threat to that. I think I spent a lot of my earlier years overanalyzing if the move that I was making was the right move or the wrong move, or, you know, what somebody would think of me if I stayed at a certain company for a longer period of time than I should have or whatever. And at the end of the day, I was focusing on the wrong shit. I wasn't paying attention to the opportunity that was in front of me to discover what it was I was really good at and what I was passionate about. I was trying to sort of fit myself in a box. And, you know, I think that that's the worst thing you can do for yourself. You know, I look at, like, I was at this event a couple weeks back in Philly, and there were two seniors from Penn State that were at that event. And these guys absolutely blew me away. They run their own companies. They are just so driven and so passionate. And, you know, younger generations have all of the access to the information that they could possibly want at their fingertips. And so for me, I look back and I say, well, shit, like, get busy living or get busy dying, right? If you start at 18 and you start just following your fascination and digesting tons of information that lights you up, you're going to find your passion really fast. And you're going to start to pursue what you're talking about, which is worrying less about, you know, the future and just focusing on being good for other people and doing good work. And next thing you know, you're in business for 29 years, right? And you're doing stuff that you love and you've got clients who love you and you've found your passion. And then you don't have to go through that whole corporate slog, right? So that's what I would say to myself. You know, I would say it in a shorter way, but
that's okay. Yeah. I love the way you put it. And I think it's a great sentiment, you know, and I think you're doing it, man. You're showing up for yourself right now and showing up for other people. And it really comes through in your content. It certainly comes through talking to you, you know? So I really applaud your energy and your passion and the way that you're helping people by helping them be themselves and be a little bit brave and get out there and share who they are, man. So good for you.
Thanks very much. That really means a lot to me.
Yeah, man, you're crushing it. Keep doing it and just keep being you. Don't try to do anything different because it's working. You know, you're doing great stuff. So thank you so much for being here. And I really appreciate the time. This was great.
Thank you for having me. This is the best conversation I've had all week.
Want to hear more inspiring stories? Subscribe on your preferred podcast app so you don't miss an episode. And if you like what we're doing, please rate, review, and share. It's the best way to support us. Thank you for listening to Brand Story.